Hello and welcome to the December 16th edition of Juno Afternoon. I'm Joan Pardes. We've got a great show. We'll get an update on CBJ activities with City Manager Kim Kiefer. We've got a pre-recorded chat about the charity walk, the 12 Trees of Christmas. We'll be talking about Thursday's winter solstice celebration at the planetarium. And Jenny Fremlin will be here to talk about an upcoming Facebook workshop that will take place on Thursday. All that and more. Stay tuned.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. An Arizona lawmaker says the bipartisan budget agreement the Senate is taking up this week is good for Indian country, but still falls short. Matt Laszlo has a story from Washington.
Sequestration's billions of dollars in indiscriminate budget cuts has hurt Indian country this year. The agreement that has passed the House adds $45 billion in spending, which Arizona Democrat Raul Grijalva says is a good thing.
Health services, education are direct sources for Indian country, and I'm hopeful that as those agencies prioritize, that they look at where the greatest negative impact was, and you know, we're going to follow up and kind of encourage that, and it's been Indian country.
While the plan eases sequestration for the next 2 years, Grijalva says it falls short because it's temporary and limited.
You know, we're softening sequestration. We're really not eliminating it. It just gets postponed.
The legislation is now in the Senate, where many lawmakers are voicing frustration over the proposal, which means it still has to overcome a big hurdle before it can get to the president. For National Native News, I'm Matt Laszlo in Washington.
A study by the Government Accountability Office shows that it takes more than a year for the Indian Health Service to process payments to contractors in 8% of claims. Wyoming Public Radio's Irina Zhorov reports.
The Indian Health Service provides limited medical services to tribal members and outsources other treatments through the Contract Health Services Program. The GAO's Kathleen King says some payments are delayed because decisions about whether IHS will pay for a service are made on a case-by-case basis.
The Contract Health Care Services Program is really unlike other health insurance programs because it does not have, for example, defined eligibility and it does not have defined benefits. Eligibility depends upon an individual set of circumstances and also the medical condition that the person is seeking treatment for.
The billings office, which covers Wyoming, pays over 90% of claims within a year and nearly 50% of claims within 3 months of service delivery. It's a higher rate than most other offices in the U.S. The report says the Affordable Care Act could help streamline eligibility requirements for contract health services and free up some IHS funds. For National Native News, I'm Irina Zhorov.
In New Mexico, the Acoma Business Enterprise has been awarded a federal grant to investigate the feasibility of creating a native food hub. As Carrie Young reports, if developed, the food distribution system would be the first in the nation to serve primarily Native American farmers.
Officials with the USDA say the study is a strategic investment designed to help Native American farmers find new markets for their products. Terry Brunner, the director of the USDA's Rural Development Department in New Mexico, says expanding market opportunities could help solve the problem that many Native farmers face at the end of the growing season, when large portions of their produce go unsold or unutilized.
With this project, Native growers from around the state of New Mexico can take their produce to a central location and have it sorted and distributed out to food outlets, which would be a great path towards sustainability for our farmers in New Mexico.
The Acoma Business Enterprise was selected by the 10 Southern Pueblo Council to apply for the funding because of its capacity to implement the program. For National Native News, I'm Carrie Young.
In December 2012, Attawapiskat First Nation Chief Teresa Spence began a hunger strike to draw attention to First Nations issues. The leader wanted to persuade the Canadian government to take their concerns seriously. Her community had declared a state of emergency because some people were living in unheated sheds. The protest lasted 6 weeks as Spence subsisted on broth and tea. Attawapiskat still struggles with substandard living conditions and housing shortages. The government is reportedly working on building housing units on the Ontario Reserve. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Kawanak Broadcast Corporation is accepting art for the Alaska Native Art Auction, February 20th, 2014 in Anchorage, Alaska. Over 400 business leaders and executives attend this annual event to buy art. Proceeds benefit National Native News. Learn more at knba.org. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
As a special way to commemorate KTOO's 40th anniversary, Juno artist Constance Baltuk has created a special limited edition print from her painting titled Waterfall, Salmon Creek. We're offering 200 prints signed and numbered by the artist as a 40th anniversary fundraising gift for KTOO. To learn more, visit ktoo.org.
Hello, you're listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO News Juno. I'm Joan Pardis, your Monday host. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. He is at the board. And we've got weather to talk about. The rest of today is snow showers diminishing. New snow accumulation up to 1 inch, highs around 33, east wind 10 miles per hour. Tonight, decreasing clouds, colder, scattered snow showers in the evening, lows around 20, except around 13 in wind-sheltered areas. East wind 10 miles per hour, increasing to 10 to 20 miles per hour late. Tomorrow, partly cloudy, highs 21 to 27. Tuesday night, mostly clear, colder, lows 7 to 17. Wind chill to 20 below because of that northeast wind, 5 to 15 miles per hour. Wednesday, increasing clouds, slight chance of no snow. Highs 17 to 23, northeast wind 5 to 15 miles per hour. And then it looks like snow right through the weekend, which it looks like snow and rain. Okay, some news. So be part of the studio audience December 20th at 5 p.m. for Forum at 360. This is here at the KTOO 360 Art Studio. The topic is Living the Language, featuring Tlingit speaker and clan leader David Kitsik, who is on the show, and he is very, very, very interesting. UAS Tlingit language teacher Marsha Hotch, UAS assistant professor of Alaska Native Languages Lance Twitchell, and linguist Alice Taff. Forum at 360 will be recorded for later broadcast on 360 North statewide, TV, and KTOO FM. That's Forum at 360, Friday, December 20th, 5 p.m. at KTOO. Be a part of the studio. So that's what's happening in the studio downstairs on Friday. And here in the studio with me right now is Kim Kiefer. She is the city manager of the City and Borough of Juneau. Hi, Kim.
Hello.
Thanks for dropping in for your Monday chat.
Thank you for inviting me.
So there is an assembly meeting tonight, right?
There is. 7 o'clock in the assembly chambers. It's a fairly light agenda. There's only a couple action items. Both of them are grant appropriations. There are a couple items for executive session. We'll be talking about parking and also be talking about the Oregon incident with a school district employee that will also be happening in executive session. So obviously I can't say anything about those two things. The meeting will start off a little bit unusual in that the assembly will recess into what's the committee? Just went out of my head. They're going to be looking at an LID. Improvements for 4 units on Douglas Highway that got sewer. So everybody pays a portion of that, and the city pays a big portion of it. And so it's just adopting that final LID. So the assembly will sit as the Board of Equalization and then come back in and do a recommendation from that. So it's a little bit different start to the meeting, and then we get into the regular public comment and all the rest of the usual items that happen at the agenda.
Okay, and that's 7 o'clock. And let's say you're listening and you've never been to an assembly meeting. Where is the assembly meeting?
Oh, that's a great question. The assembly meetings are in the assembly chambers and City Hall. So the downtown, the building that has the mural on it across from Marine Park, it also has the time and temperature. Somebody just recently told me they were looking for the clock, because we always say it's got the clock on it. And they were looking for an old clock. They weren't looking for sort of a modern time and temp that we have on there now. So it's right across from Marine Park. You come in those doors across from Marine Park. Those are the doors that are unlocked. Go in those doors, and right to the right is the assembly chambers.
Okay.
Lots of seating.
Okay. And I just have one question of that whole litany of things that are happening tonight.
Yes.
Grant appropriations. What grant appropriations are you
There's
talking about?
There's two of them. One is for safety needs at docks and harbors. And it's a $75,000 grant, and that's to do some cameras down on the docks as well as some radios. And they will be working with General Police Department and our MIS department to make sure where the cameras go, police can have access to them, and they can have access to them if there's something that comes up that they need to be able to review the tapes. And then the other one is appropriations of funding to be able to purchase six cameras and one rifle for the police department, and it's out of drug forfeiture money. So we get a percentage of the money as we go out and convict people of drug crimes, and there's part of that money that goes back to JPD that they can then use to buy other things or special buildings or other kinds of things that they need to be able to help them do their job. So the cameras they're replacing are about 10 years old, and as we all know, technology's changed a lot in 10 years.
One of these days, I'd like you to come in with a grid, and I think we should go through all these acronyms so what is MIS?
That's our Management Information Services.
Okay.
So that's what people refer to as IT, information technology.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the tech side of things.
Okay. So that is the assembly meeting at 7 o'clock, tonight.
Yep.
Okay. And then we've got a couple of questions here, and this is no acronyms needed.
Okay.
So what's the deal with the downtown parking meters? What is the latest on that?
So, as I said, we will be talking in an executive session tonight about parking, and we are looking at all of our options right now for parking. The parking meters, as they are right now, are still people still need to use them as they're designed to be used, and we are looking at a variety of different options that you look at when you have a system that isn't functioning the way you want to. So we're looking at how can it be improved, can it not be improved, what are other options, and how can we go forward with each one of those and what makes the most sense for the city long term.
So the parking meters are operational, and the parking laws and penalties for not abiding by those laws are enforced at
the most part.
Okay, then. All right. You heard it here.
Well, the important thing is for people to not think that they can just park wherever they want to downtown, because there are tickets being the CSOs, community service officers.
Okay, the little people. Not the little people. The people in the little parking vehicle.
The little vehicle, right. Yep, the little parking vehicle. They go and they are ticketing now. So don't think you can run in and park in a loading zone if you're not loading. Think that you can park in some place that's marked for an hour and think you can spend a couple hours there. So they are ticketing right now, so you need to be aware of where you're parking and look at the signs.
Okay. And so what I just heard is that the system is really not working the way the city would like it to work. You're looking into some options, and that's one of the things that will be done in the executive committee tonight?
Correct.
That, okay, great. Okay, and let's move on. You know, it's that time of year that we have the holidays right around the corner. We have a new year, 2014, lurking like just a few weeks away. So, Kim, as city manager of our lovely burg, what are the accomplishments that you're most proud of for this year?
Boy, that's a hard one, because it's a team. We have a great team with the city, and I think that's one of the things that I feel proud about, is that we're really trying to work together as a team and look at it from all different angles, and have that communication with each other as department directors and frontline people. We've got some things that I think are good to move us along. So we adopted a comprehensive plan. There was lots of discussion about this year. I think the discussion is going to be really healthy as we move forward to write in a new comprehensive plan in the years to come. So having that behind us, the comprehensive plan is a plan that every usually 5 years, 5 to 10 years gets an update. And really it's a visionary document, the comprehensive plan. It talks about economic development. It talks about recreation. It talks about business. It talks about transportation. And the great thing about the economic development plan, the comprehensive plan, is you can find all different ideas in the comprehensive plan. It's not meant to say this is the only way to go forward, but it's meant to outline all the things that are possibilities. So transportation, it talks about airport. It talks about roads. It talks about trains. It talks about ferries. So it talks about a variety of different things, not saying this is the single thing we need to do, but it's here's what we want to look at as a whole, that these are important concepts. This year, the document got very big, and over 300 pages, and that makes it really difficult for people to be able to really use it. The Planning Commission uses it a lot. You have to have permits, and they have to be acceptable under the comprehensive plan, and they always look at that. But what we need to do for the future is look at having a slimmed-down version that still has all those pieces in it, but something that's much more usable. So having that behind us is really good. I think the assembly, we've got a new assembly member. We've got a limited number of goals to move forward with, and I think that's really good. We've had a number of goals over the years that are a couple dozen, and that makes it difficult to move those things forward. I think the focus that's been on housing has been really good, and that really started from the assembly, and now it's to staff to be able to make some changes. And so we're moving forward with that, looking at subdivisions and changing how we the conditions we put on subdivisions so that you may not have to have sidewalks on both sides, which adds to the cost of it. And so then, in turn, it gets passed on to the cost of the house. So I think that focus I'm very excited about, and staff's very excited to be able to move forward with that, because it's a need in this community. It has been a need in this community forever. I mean,
absolutely,
housing has never been easy. I'm excited that we're moving forward with a library project. That's a great benefit for the community, especially given that the cost to run the library will not go up, even though the size of the library will be doubled.
Let's talk about that. Specifically, what is the library project?
So the library project is, right now, the Mendenhall Library is in the Mendenhall Mall, and it will be moving to Diamond Park, adjacent to the Diamond Park Aquatic Facility. So there's some good partnerships there, too. So as parents take their kids to swimming lesson, they can go over and read a magazine for a half hour if they don't want to watch. And so the plan is it will be bid out this March or April. And the reason that they're able to say they can run the library on the cost of the budget right now is because of the lease costs. So those lease costs will go into the operational costs, and they'll have more control over turning lights off, doing other kinds of things to be more effective and efficient. They've also tried to design it as efficiently as possible. They're looking at trying to do ground source heat pump there to keep the long-term costs down. They've really worked with the architects to try and look at how they designed it so that the way the light comes in, given how much light we have at certain times of the year and how much light we don't have at certain times of the year, they've tried to utilize that as much as they can in part of the design.
How big is it going to be?
It's going to be about twice the size as the current one.
That'll be
so
great.
So it'll be really nice, and it'll be designated spaces. Right now, they've done what they can in a mall, and they've done a really good job trying to do that. But this, they can actually design the spaces for the kinds of needs and have it in a fairly open layout so that they can adjust as libraries adjust in the future.
That's great. So if it goes out to bid in March, when do you think deadline chunky. When do you think it'll be done? I mean, not even like start being built, but when do you think it'll be done? When do you think
it'll
go in?
I'm wanting to say much sooner than that.
Oh, yeah.
I'm wanting to say if it's bid out in March of 14, that maybe by the fall, winter of 15.
Oh, wow, that's great.
And I will get back to you that exact deadline of what they have on their schedule, because I don't have that right now.
Okay. So you're listening to Juno Afternoon. We're chatting with Kim Kiefer, who is the CBGA city manager. And I have one last question, and then we've got to go.
Okay.
So that was the little wrap-up of this year. What do you want to see accomplished in 2014 for the city?
I look forward to seeing the transit development plan completed. I think that from what I'm hearing, there's a lot of really good ideas with that that we'll be able to accomplish more for the citizens on our transit plan. Wrapping up a project that will just be starting this year, which is the economic development plan. I think that will really set us up for the future and look at how we diversify our economy, knowing that there's state monies drying up and federal monies are drying up. So those are both exciting projects that will move us into the future.
Okay. Well, Kim, happy holidays. Thank you for
happy
joining
holidays.
Us. We're going to take a short break, and then we're going to come back. Jeff Brown has a recorded piece we're going to listen to about the charity walk, the 12 12 Trees of Christmas. So stay tuned.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 16th of December, 2013. The Battle of the Bulge began on this day, 1944, World War II, in the Ardennes Forest, a snowy, mountainous region of Belgium and France, went on for more than a month, the last major German offensive of the war, the bloodiest battle of World War II for American troops. 19,000 killed, more than 47,000 wounded, 23,000 were missing. It's the birthday of Jane Austen, born in Hampshire, England, 1775, the seventh of eight children. Her first published work was Sense and Sensibility in 1811. She was widely read in her own lifetime, then put aside for a while. It was not until the 1940s that her work became the focus of academic scholarship. Jane Austen, who said, "A large income is the best recipe for happiness I ever heard of." It's believed that Beethoven was born on this day, 1770, Ludwig von Beethoven in Bonn, Germany, born into a family of court musicians. He was a teenager when he first met Mozart in Vienna, played the piano for him. Mozart wrote to a friend, "I think this one will make a noise in the world." It's the birthday of the philosopher George Santayana, born in Madrid, 1863, who said, "History is a pack of lies about events that never happened, told by people who weren't there." He also said, "There are books in which the footnotes or comments scrawled by some reader's hand in the margin are more interesting than the text. The world is one of these books." It's the birthday of Margaret Mead, the anthropologist, Philadelphia, 1901, best known for her book Coming of Age in Samoa, which came out when she was just 27, in which she said that Samoan girls did not go through the same tortured teenage years as girls in the United States because she thought relaxed sexual attitudes might be responsible. And it's the birthday of science fiction author Arthur C. Clarke, 1917, in Somerset, England, who on his 90th birthday, a few months before he died, said, "I have great faith in optimism as a guiding principle. I'd like to see us overcome our tribal divisions and begin to think and act as if we were one family. That would be real globalization." Here's a poem for today by Tom Hennen, "Sheep in the Winter Night." Inside the barn, the sheep were standing, pushed close to one another. Some were dozing, some had eyes wide open, listening in the dark. Some had no doubt heard of wolves. They looked weary with all the burdens they had to carry, like being thought of as stupid and cowardly, disliked by cowboys for the way they eat grass about an inch into the dirt. The silly look they have just after shearing, of being one of the symbols of the Christian religion. In the darkness of the barn, their woolly backs were full of light, gathered on summer pastures. Above them, their white breath was suspended, while far off in the pine woods, night was deep in silence. The owl and rabbit were wondering, along with the trees, if the air would soon fill with snowflakes. But the power that moves through the world and makes our hair stand on end was keeping the answer to itself. Poem by Tom Hennen, "Sheep in the Winter Night," from his collection Darkness Sticks to Everything, published by Copper Canyon Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by Lumosity. Lumosity.com's daily online workouts are designed to improve memory and attention and are dedicated to helping people feel sharper, think faster, and remember more. More at Lumosity.com. Produced by Joy Biles, with assistance from Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
in the studio with Kelly Connerton, who's working with the Downtown Business Association about the 12 Trees of Christmas, the unique charity walk. Kelly, welcome to the station.
Thank you so much, Jeff. I'm excited to be here talking about the 6th annual 12 Trees of Christmas walk for charity.
And how does it work?
So we have 12 different businesses that are downtown in the local downtown area, and they have picked a charity that they are sponsoring. Their tree is all about this charity. For example, Annie Kales has one for St. Vincent de Paul. Shoefly has a tree for Ware. Imagination Station has one for the Imagination Library. Psych Alaska has one for Cancer Connection. So there's 12 different businesses downtown, and they each have a tree that is based around a charity. And we have whoever gets the most votes for their tree. And you can vote. I have actually a ballot in front of me. And you can vote for whichever business you would like to sponsor their tree. And whoever gets the most votes gets $500 towards their charity. And then we also do a drawing of all the businesses. And whoever gets that also gets $500 towards their charity. So it's a really great thing. The Downtown Businesses Association is doing this. This is our 6th year of doing it. And we have great shops that are working with us, and also great charities around the community that are being sponsored.
So we have a little time here. I want you to list off all the businesses that are taking part in the charities they're supporting.
All right. So we have, again, Annie Kales, which is St. Vincent de Paul, is their charity. First National Bank has Salvation Army. Shoefly has chosen Aware. The Jewel Box, Make-A-Wish Foundation. Juno Imagination Station has chosen the Imaginarium Library. Alaska Brewing Co. Depot has chosen Southeast Sale. Psych Alaska has chosen the Cancer Connection. The Alaska Cash/the Triangle Club has the Southeast Food Bank. The Red Dog Saloon has the Gastonia Hand Society. Hearthside Books has the Juno Symphony. Trove has Sea Dogs. Heritage Coffee has Big Brothers Big Sisters. So they're all fabulous organizations in the community that we feel are great and that make a difference.
So the idea is to go downtown and stop by each one of these 12 businesses that are taking part and vote for your favorite tree?
Yes. So you can go go check out all the trees. I mean, it'll be a little bit of a walk, but it'll be a nice brisk walk in the beautiful snow that we have today. Or you can do it, and the voting ends on the 22nd, so make sure you get in your vote before then. And then KTOO will announce the winner, as well as we will send out emails and post it on Christmas Eve. So we're really excited about that.
All right, Kelly Connerton talking about the 12 Trees of Christmas, unique fundraiser put on by the Downtown Business Association. Anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
Well, don't forget to vote, and we're really excited about this. Thanks a lot, Juno.
So that was the 13 Banjos of Christmas, because Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show, and he runs the board, so all the music, all the funny stuff is Jeff Brown. No, that's not very surprising, though, is it? It is 3:28 p.m. You are listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO News Juno, and I have John Kremers in the studio now. He's with the Planetarium, the Marie Drake Planetarium here in Juno. He's here to talk about tomorrow's program, which is about the winter solstice. Now, the winter solstice is not tomorrow, but the program at the Planetarium will be about that. Thanks, John, for coming by.
Well, thank you for having me.
So we were talking about during the break, about how people around the globe celebrate winter solstice.
Right. So a lot of things that we celebrate or other people celebrate this time of year is kind of has an astronomical basis for the celebration. And so in the case of Americans, or a lot of Americans, not everybody, of course, but Christmas is based on the solstice, that time of year. There's lots of theories about how our Christmas celebration and when the birth of Christ was, determined to be. But the The 25th of December was, I believe it's a Roman calendar. It would be the solstice on the Roman calendar, the 25th. So it's interesting how a lot of these dates all end up on the solstice for celebrations. And so that's one of the things we're going to explore during our planetarium show.
And what time is the planetarium show tomorrow?
The planetarium show will be at 6:30, so it's about usually an hour. We'll try to keep it, less than an hour if we can. We realize that people with young children, that's, kind of the limit for attention spans, and so we try to keep it to that.
So families are welcome, and is there a cost, or is it free?
So, no, we don't charge for our shows at the planetarium. It's run by volunteers. It's the facility is owned by the school system. And we just try to give a free show every month.
And where is the planetarium?
The planetarium is in the Marie Drake building, and I don't know if that's the term they use today, but it's the building kind of between Harborview and the high school.
By the pool, though, isn't it? It's like in between the pool and Harborview, and I think the entrance is by that turf field, is that
right? Right, exactly. It's by that practice turf field is the entrance, and you'll see the dome above the door when you walk in for the planetarium.
That sounds great. What a great resource to have here. So also, considering that solstice, which is, what is the exact date? Some people say it's the 21st, the 22nd, the 20th.
It varies,
the 25th,
of course.
You just said?
Yeah. It depends on what calendar you use, what day of the year it would be on. But this year, the solstice will be on December 21st at 5 p.m., 11 minutes after 5 p.m.
Okay. And since solstice is the shortest day of the year, do you know exactly how much light we have in Juneau on?
Wow, I don't know exactly. I mean, I could look it up on my app on my phone, but I don't know.
6 hours and change, probably.
Yeah,
six or seven hours.
It's not much more than that, if any, so it's... Yeah, it's not much daylight. And, here in Juneau with the geography, with surrounded by mountains on, the east and the west, we get shorter days even than that, really, before we actually get to see the sun.
Right.
If it wasn't cloudy.
Correct. And what were you discussing, too, is that the best time for constellation viewing is, obviously, the winter months with the very, very short days, so you have more time.
Right. For astronomy purposes, the winter is... in some ways, the only time that we really get to have good astronomy viewing in Juneau. And that has to do with you need solar, astronomical darkness, which we don't get in Juneau from about the middle of April till about the middle of September. So between those times, viewing is great. The only problem with viewing with a telescope, of course, is what you need is a nice clear night, and then in the winter it tends to be cold. When we get clear nights, then we get really cold weather. So you have to be kind of, I don't know.
Hardy?
Hardy.
That's the word that came up in everyone's mind. Okay, so back to the planetarium event tomorrow. It is a winter solstice celebration. It's great for the whole family. It's 6:30. It's free. It's a planetarium, like with the whole star show and explanations and... also looking at solstice in different cultures. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Is there one solstice celebrated in another culture that really kind of strikes a chord with you?
Let me think. I can't think of one offhand. One of the things that I had done some research on a while back was how... this time of year, why we have celebrations, this time of year for many cultures in the past, this was kind of a time of famine, really, the start of a time of you wouldn't be able to have crops. They would kill most of the animals that they were going to butcher for that period because they didn't want to feed them during the winter, right? If you had limited resources, you'd have to kill off your crops. So this time of year, you would have basically the last fresh meat that you would get until sometime, in the spring or summer. So it was for a lot of cultures, this kind of celebration around that, time of period. And they would use it for, their calendar of how to figure out, what what to do in the spring when
how many more days until we can plant?
Yeah.
You know, or when will they have their babies, the few animals they kept alive.
Exactly.
So, all right. Well, John, thank you for coming by. He's a volunteer at the planetarium. Thanks for all you do. And the show is tomorrow, 6:30, about the solstice. Stay tuned. We'll be back in just a little bit.
Thank you.
The Paul Winter Consort presents a holiday gathering of friends, old and new, including a set by Paul Winter's early jazz sextet, reunited after 50 years. As always, the winter solstice celebration happens in New York's Cathedral of St. John the Divine, and we hope you'll join us for our annual holiday broadcast from NPR.
Thursday night at 9 on KRNN in Juneau.
When the light is low and the day is done, Aurora dances down. When she finds the land that thirsts for sun, Aurora dances down. When the stars are up and the moon is dark, Aurora dances down. When the night leaps out like a fiery spark, Aurora dances down. Oh, she'll spin and turn and chill and burn till your knees fall to the ground. She wears the starry crown when the moon and sun are joined as one. Aurora dances down. Oh, the voice will still and the heart will leap. Aurora dances down. As the midnight watch we keep, Aurora dances down. Every human, bird, and beast, Aurora dances down. All partake of the swirling feast, Aurora dances down. She'll spin and turn and chill and burn till your knees fall to the ground. She wears the starry crown when the moon and sun are joined as one. Aurora dances down. She bounds, Aurora dances down. Through every forest, field, and town, Aurora dances down. She hangs her ribbons burning bright, Aurora dances down. She weaves the rainbow of the night, Aurora dances down. She'll spin and turn and chill and burn till your knees fall to the ground. She wears the starry crown when the moon and sun are joined as one. Aurora dances down. Every woman, child, and man, Aurora dances down. Will in wordless wonder stand, Aurora dances down. As across the night's unfurls, Aurora dances down. One more mystery of this world, Aurora dances down. She'll spin and turn and chill and burn till your knees fall to the ground. She wears a starry crown when the moon and sun are joined as one. Aurora dances down. She'll spin and turn and chill and burn till your knees fall to the ground. She wears a starry crown when the moon and sun are joined as one. Aurora dances down.
programming support comes from the Juno Artist Gallery, with 25 local artists working in a variety of mediums to create beautiful and unique works of art, open year-round and every day until Christmas. The Juno Artist Gallery, located downtown at 175 South Franklin Street in the Senate Building.
This is Bird Note. How do pelicans catch fish? There are two kinds of pelicans in North America, the white and the brown, and they've evolved different tactics to capture their prey. White pelicans form a group, swim in a line, and while herding a school of fish, all dip their heads at once. The white pelican's broad bill spreads its huge pouch as the bird pushes through the water. As each bird lifts its head, water drains out of the pouch and the fish go down with a gulp. These pelicans breed on western lakes and winter on shallow salt water. Brown pelicans capture fish from above without warning. Brown pelicans are smaller than white and fly along our coasts in flocks. Their bills are narrow, so they can cleave the deeper ocean water in a dive. When they spot a fish, they plummet straight down, and the pouch opens to engulf the prey. Fortunately, though both species have been declining, even rare at times, conservation has helped, and their numbers have increased. Today's show brought to you by the Lufkin Family Foundation. You can form a line with your friends or dive solo to gulp down more info about pelicans at our website, birdnote.org. I'm Mary McCann.
On January 26, 2006, station KTOO was granted a license by the Federal Communication Commission to serve the public interest as a public trustee until February 1, 2014. Our license will expire on February 1, 2014. We have filed an application for renewal with the FCC. A copy of this application is available for public inspection during our regular business hours. It contains information concerning this station's performance during the last 8 years. Individuals who wish to advise the FCC of facts relating to our renewal application and to whether this station has operated in the public interest should file comments and petitions with the FCC no later than January 2, 2014. Further information concerning the FCC's broadcast license renewal process is available at 360 Egan Drive, Juneau, Alaska, 99801, or may be obtained from the FCC, Washington, D.C., 20554.
Hello, you're listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO News Juno. I'm Joan Pardis, your Monday host. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. It is 3:43 p.m. in Alaska's capital city and throughout the state. Our next guest is Jenny Fremlin from Alaska Litho. Alaska Litho is a local business, and for the past, I think, a year or so, they've been having business classes, different types of marketing classes, and so on and so forth to help small business owners, anyone actually, to get up to speed on things. And they are going to have a Facebook workshop for business. And that, for businesses, is the exact title. And that's going to take place Thursday at Gold Belt Hotel. And Jenny, thanks for dropping in today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So Facebook is like now the common denominator of so many things.
Right.
So it's become like a cell phone, a computer. It's just become so integrated into our everyday life.
Right, and it's used on cell phones and computers and everywhere.
Exactly. So this before we get into this particular workshop that you're having this Thursday, let's talk a little bit about Alaska Litho. What does your company do?
Okay. Well, Alaska Litho has been in Southeast and in the Juneau community for over 65 years. I think this was our 66th year. And we started media services back in 2011 to supplement that with a digital outreach. So what I work on in media services is making that outreach package more complete. So if you're doing a print newsletter, maybe you want to send e-newsletters as well, and we can do both, and we can tie it all together. We do social media campaigns, we do social media audits, we do websites, responsive design, and we've started working on mobile app development as well.
Okay. So the print is for 66 years, Alaska Litho has been running basically a printing service.
Right.
And then in 2011, they expanded into the new print world, which is basically online, which is not printed at all, but it is so much part of how we get our information.
Right.
Okay. And then for the past year or so, you've been doing workshops?
We started that in 2011, actually, winter. Oh. So this will be our third winter.
Wow, that's
that we've
great.
Done them.
And do you run them like one a quarter, you know? Or
we do them pretty much only in the winter because everyone's so busy in the summer here.
Right.
So we've done five or six each winter, and this year we're doing it a little different. So we did one a month in the past, and now we're doing two in the same day because we're doing beginning and intermediate Facebook. So we wanted people to be able to take beginning to get into intermediate and still have that fresh in their minds and then just take a break and come back for that. So we're not quite sure which other ones we're going to do this winter, but in the past we've done content management systems, specifically WordPress. We're working now also with Concrete 5, so we may do something that combines both of those. We've done content creation, so we'll probably work on content marketing again in one of the classes. I've had...
Oh, hang on, Jenny, I just want to translate for people. So, and let's see if I've got it right, Jenny,
okay.
If I don't. What she's talking about is websites, is creating websites and what you actually put on your website.
Right.
So when she talks about creating content, that's the content that you see on websites, how many pages, how many clicks to get where you need to go, that type of
right.
thing.
Right, and we do whole workshops also on analytics, so understanding how people are engaging with your content, where they're going, where they're coming from, what they're most interested in. But content marketing is sort of changing. It's not just websites. It also includes your social media content and the videos that you're making and your e-newsletters. So it's all of it put together.
Right, and analyzing that data to see how people are receiving their news.
Right.
And receiving what you're trying to put out. So
right.
What you put out. So let's talk about Facebook workshops for businesses. It's Thursday. It starts at 9, and the first section is for beginners.
For beginners, right.
And that goes from 9 to 12?
Yes.
And how much does that cost?
$95.
And then the Facebook for businesses for the intermediate user is from when to when?
It starts at... that one ends at noon. We have a two-hour break, so it's 2 to 5.
Okay. And how much is that?
That's 95 as well, but if you take both, there's a discount, and it's 170 for the whole day, 6 hours.
Okay. So Facebook workshops for businesses. So you may or may not have your own personal page, and then how to make a page for your business and reach the customers that you want to reach.
Right. Actually, to participate in the beginning one, you do have to have a personal account, but you don't need a business account yet. We'll have business accounts to work on. And these are kind of fun because we can get people in there just messing around, and it doesn't matter if you break things because it's not your real business page. So you can try out all of the tools and see how they work.
So it's not, I would assume that it's the basics of creating a business page and then how to utilize it to get the results that you
right.
want.
Right, how to even just use it, how to post, how to schedule a post, where to find the settings, how to update it, how to share a photo. So understanding actually the details of day-to-day use.
And do you go into content two, helping people say what they want to say?
That's more in part two.
Okay.
In part two, we take the skills that you learned in part one and apply them to your own business. So part one is for people who have a personal account and just really don't know how to schedule a post in advance or what the insights mean, things like that. Or they want to post a picture, but they're a little afraid that maybe it'll show up in the wrong spot and who's going to see this and where's it going. So you actually get to practice that in this workshop.
Right. I actually have quite a few accounts. I have some for causes and some for clients and my personal. And the other day I posted something to my personal that was supposed to go just to
right.
one of the causes. So I deleted. You could delete like that, which is a very good tool.
Right. Right. And just knowing where all those settings are. And that's one of the confusing things about Facebook. They change it so much. So where's the setting that says if you're posting as a business or as yourself, and how do you set the priority on that?
Right, and then also it's just interesting of what pops up on your Facebook page, too, as
right.
far as the different advertisers, that all of a sudden I'm getting posts from something that I never liked, but I'm getting posts.
Right,
so
and
that,
then
that's kind of interesting.
Intermediate Facebook, we talk about how to make that your ad.
Exactly, that's what I'm thinking. You know, I was thinking, oh, well, they know that I might be a candidate
right.
for their service. So obviously.
Yeah, they have pretty specific criteria now in Facebook, drilling down into who sees your ad based on marital status, education, where they are, whether they're traveling right now, if they're on a mobile device or not.
And that's the reality of the web. And correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding is every time you're on the web, you are being tracked for what, you know, just for market research as far as, you know, what are you buying? What are you not buying? You know, would you be a candidate for X, Y, or Z product? Is that correct?
Right, yeah. Unless you specifically do something to turn off that tracking, it by default will track you.
I would go to a workshop to find out how to turn off that tracking.
Yeah.
But you're not going to tell us on the air. We're going to have to go to that workshop. Okay, so talk about some of the workshops that you've done in the past.
Well, we did the WordPress workshop, and that was pretty popular. That's something, too, with nonprofits. WordPress is a great content management system because it's free. It has a large user base. You can look up tutorials, get free add-ons, all sorts of bells and whistles. I mean, you can run a store online with no cost for your actual software. So we went through that and taught people how to get their own website set up and worked on that. And then we followed that one up with the content marketing. So what do you put on the website once you've got it built? And we've done Facebook in the past, but it changes so frequently that every time it's a different class.
It's a good marketing tool on their end. To just keep on changing it up.
Yeah.
You know, just keep on changing it up. So what do you see? You know, I was talking with Kim Kiefer, the city manager, earlier, and I was asking her about 2014. As the media...
psychologist.
The media psychologist. As a media psychologist for Alaska Litho, what do you see coming down the pike as far as outreach for businesses?
That will be big in the next year?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good question. I haven't started looking there yet, but I should because it's already December.
What's on the horizon?
Asked a lot what could possibly push Facebook out of the way, what could be the next big thing. And I think that there's nothing really lined up right now to take them over because they have a billion users. So it's sort of become the thing that people have to use, not necessarily that they want to. And I think that if you're looking for a new network that's similar to it that could get more users, they would have to pay their users. So give you something for your content if people are reading it because they're making money off of you in their ads.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And speaking of that, the ads, how do you see the online ads and social media and web content, which is so much a part of how we receive our information these days, how do you think that impacts the traditional advertising? Because even TV, you know, there's cable, it's no longer, you have a handful of channels and you're going to pay, you know, the Super Bowl ads are still the Super Bowl ads. But how do you see that really impacting, you know, how we get our content from what we watch, whether it be on the computer or on TV?
I think the difference is now that people aren't just watching television or just reading the newspaper. We're sitting around with multiple media input at the same time. So you might be looking at a Facebook ad on your tablet while you're watching television still. So it's not one single line of advertising, and one's not necessarily replacing the other. They're sort of working together. And social TV viewing is a huge thing that advertisers are working on. There was an interesting study. Twitter gets a lot of talk about how they influence television shows, but they actually showed that Facebook has more impact. So people will tweet right now about a show they're watching, but what goes on Facebook has longevity. So if I say I like a show and then my friends see it a month later and haven't seen it, they might watch it, whereas in Twitter it's buried and gone.
Right. And this is all kind of derived from the influencers, you know, the way back when they were like, who are the influencers? Who will influence what will happen? And then Facebook was extrapolated from that. So, you know, what you were just saying that, you know, hey, I'm looking, my favorite show ended last night. You could guess what it is if you're one of the fans of my favorite show. I won't even say what it is. So now we're like looking for a new show. So if boom, you said, hey, you know, I was watching this, but I've just discovered this and I'm watching all the seasons, I might be apt to go, I'm going to check it out.
Yeah, and that's also social suggestion. So that's something that's been popular with word of mouth even before social media and social networking were around. And they found that with ads, too. If it says that your friend liked something, you're more likely to check it out than if you don't know anybody who's used it.
Right, so Facebook is just this derivative of this old advertising adage.
Right.
So Jenny Fremlin is here from the Alaska Litho Company, and Alaska Litho does print and online media services. And Thursday at Goldbelt from 9 to 12 is beginner Facebook workshop for businesses. And then in the afternoon, it's 2 to 5. Both workshops are 95. If you do both, it's 175.
Right.
And do you have room for a few more people?
We do. Yeah, and we have a registration form online at aklitho.com/register. Or, of course, there's the event on our Facebook page.
All you have to do is look for Alaska Litho.
Right.
All right. Thank you so much for coming.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. Thanks.
Friends don't let friends go another day without a 2014 membership as a friend of the Juneau Douglas City Museum and a copy of the Natural History of Juneau Trails. Each member that joins or renews at the $75 level or above will receive Discovery Southeast naturalist Richard Karstensen's new book, Natural History of Juneau Trails. For more information, call 586-3572 or online, junofriends.org.
This New Year's Eve, head to the Jack when Juno Jazz and Classics proudly presents Swing in the New Year. It's an evening of dancing or just listening to the sounds of the Thunder Mountain Big Band, the Miss Ain't Behavin' Trio, and vocalist Patricia Hull. So get your tickets and more information at jazzandclassics.org, the Jack, Hearthside Books, and At the Door. Then, get ready to swing in the New Year, a benefit for Juno Jazz and Classics 2014.
Spirit of Youth celebrates teenage Alaskans who are making our communities better places to live. They give their time, their hearts and minds, their passion, their creativity. Now, hear their stories.
That's 19-year-old Nelson Kinnick. He was the 2013 Youth Keynote Speaker at the annual Elders and Youth Conference hosted by First Alaskans Institute. The conference was held in Fairbanks this year in the days before the AFN convention. Nelson was invited to speak about his involvement as a plaintiff in a legal case against the state's Department of Natural Resources. He and five other Alaska youth argue that the atmosphere is a collective resource and that it should be better protected against climate change. They lost the case in the lower court, but the Alaska Supreme Court recently heard it on appeal. Nelson says speaking to the crowd at Elders and Youth was pretty nerve-wracking.
Once I got into knowing what I to speak from inside, I kind of just went off, and after that I didn't even see, you know, the nervousness that I had. It just went away after I got into tune with, you know, what I knew what I was going to share.
Nelson has also been part of video screenings for a short film called Trust Alaska. The video features him and his family at home in Kipnuk as they go about living a traditional life off the land. He says he wants to show others how some Alaskans see things and why those views matter.
What inspires me to work on this issue is to know that I'll still be able to have a community to go home to and to share what I grew up with my kids and my grandchildren, other younger generations that would come.
Nelson is a freshman at UAF this year. I'm Shanna Sheehy.
Give a young person you know a boost by recognizing the good things they're doing. Nominate at spiritofyouth.org.
Provided by the Alaska State Division of Behavioral Health.
Hello, you're listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO News. The weather is numerous snow showers diminishing late. Snow accumulation to 1 inch, lows 17 to 25. Tomorrow, decreasing clouds, isolated snow showers in the morning, highs 22 to 28, northeast wind 10 to 20 miles per hour. Tuesday night, mostly clear, colder, lows 7 to 17, except around 6 above in wind sheltered areas. Northeast wind 5 to 15 miles per hour, wind chill to 20 below. That's tomorrow night. Wednesday, increasing clouds, slight chance of snow, highs 17 to 23. Wednesday night, snow. Thursday and Thursday night, snow. Friday, snow. And Friday and Friday night and Saturday looks like snow likely. It's warming up for the weekend as it stands now. Tomorrow, Pat Moore is on Juno Afternoon, and he'll be talking about Canvas art classes. He'll be chatting with Nancy DeCharney about the Jack Putt. He'll also be talking about the new display at the City Museum. He'll profile Floyd Dryden Middle School with Principal Tom Milliron and all the rest of the Juno Afternoon goodies, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more. Thank you for joining us. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. Next up, All Things Considered.
This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas. We rebroadcast.